Well, might we turn to the second letter of Peter and chapter 1, 2 Peter chapter 1. Let me just read a few verses from verse 5 to verse 7. Pardon? Okay, that's from New King James Version. That's all right. For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. My subject this evening is diligence. A social worker, a humanitarian, a nurse, Irina Sedera, Polish, died in 2008, was very much engaged in securing the protection of over 2,500 Jewish children that were in a ghetto of 500,000 people. Within the ghetto, within that population, there were 80,000 children. And as a young woman who was concerned for the general well-being, though she was Polish, not a Jew, she sought to devise ways and means and to engage with others in the rescue of these children who might otherwise have been placed upon one of these trains and taken to one of these camps where, along with their parents, they would have been put to an early death. She had to face the authorities without. She had to contend with the apprehensions, the anxieties of many within the Jewish community, not least of all parents. The choice was very difficult for these parents. Do I hold on to my child? And that child may very well be led along with me to an early death. Or do I release my child, my little son, my little daughter, that they may be housed within a Polish family or among a Polish family who, during this period when the Germans occupied Poland, they would at least be saved. These children had to have Christian names. They had Jewish names. But they had to have Christian names, and they now had to remember those names. They had to remember the address of where it was they were residing. They had to wear different kind of apparel. They had to learn to make the sign of the cross because they were living in a predominantly Roman Catholic country. They had to learn Christian prayers such as, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." And within that set of circumstances and conditions, Irina acted and moved and devised and schemed and planned in many ways, and taking considerable risk because of the German authorities, the German army, and also encountering, to some understandable degree, the resistance of the Jews. Among the queries that they had and the concerns that they had, our children will no longer be Jews. They will be Christians. They're undergoing this change and transformation. Irina and those who worked along with her took the names of all the children and every sort of detail that would be vital that they would be reconciled with their parents after the occupation and after the war. And these details were written down and placed in jars, which in turn were hidden. 2,500 children. When the war was over, those children, most of them, never saw their parents again because their parents were incinerated. Their parents were put to death. But my reason for just drawing attention to this lady, who died at the age of about 88 in 2008, is because she herself was diligent. She confronted so many obstacles. She overcame opposition. And regardless of what lay before her as a sort of stumbling block to prevent and to hinder her further advance, and she might well have been discouraged and dispirited, she was extraordinarily and extremely diligent in all that she attempted to do. The apostle himself in verse 5 says, "For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue." And the phrase "every effort," which is there found in the ESV, is, as you find it in the New King James Version, "but also for this very reason, giving all diligence." So the phrase which is there in the King James Version is in the ESV translated a little differently, but it shows some light or casts some light upon the meaning and the significance of a word that I think is used about only once, again found in Luke chapter 19 and verse 5, where Jesus meets with Zacchaeus, who is there up a tree, and Jesus looks up to him, and Jesus says this, he says, "Make haste and come down." And the phrase "make haste" is another sort of translation of the word that the Apostle Peter is using here. And what he is saying, in effect, is don't delay, don't waste time, don't saunter or drag your feet. Be painstaking in pursuing what lies ahead. What is it to be diligent? It is that, and maybe more beside. It means make haste. It means be in earnest. It means to make every effort. It means that you should pursue and persevere with diligence what lies ahead. Bishop J.C. Ryle, who was Bishop of Liverpool, and if you have any of his works, I do recommend them to you, because they are very readable. They're very plain, but very profound at the same time. And one of the things he said was that there is no gain without pain. If you're going to be diligent, then there is a cost, there is a price that you have to pay in order to gain something. John Bunyan, good old John Bunyan, he said long ago, "The soul of religion is the practical part." And here Peter is drawing our attention to what is practical. Now that you have heard what is the foundation of the faith that you share in common with one another, there is to be an outworking of that in practice. And so it's not merely a verbal profession, but it is also a practice that touches upon every area of life. And Peter himself is very practical in issuing his exhortation. And it isn't disconnected from an explanation. So here is an exhortation. The exhortation is this: for this very reason, make every effort. Be in haste. Be prepared to pursue and to persevere and to be diligent. That's the exhortation. That's the entreaty. But the ground of that, the foundation of that, is that prior explanation. Here's the exhortation. Be diligent. Well, why should I be diligent? Well, let me explain to you why you should be diligent. And those earlier verses in verse 3 and 4 give the ground and the reason. His divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us to his own glory and excellence, by which he has granted to us his precious and very great promises, so that through them you may become partakers of the divine nature, having escaped from the corruption that is in the world because of sinful desire. For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue. And so in reading these verses, certainly from verse 3 to verse 7, we can say that grace is the ground of godliness, and thus, for this reason, give all diligence to add to your faith. Well, there are several things that might be said about diligence. Let me begin with one of them. It is this, that diligence is a moral virtue. It has to do with ethics. And the grace of law written on the heart speaks with an authority which requires diligence. So, if you were to turn, for example, to Deuteronomy chapter 6 and verse 17, you would read these words. You shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God. You shall diligently keep the commandments of the Lord your God. That is a directive. It comes with authority. Again, we would have it in Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 1. If you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. So there is a diligent attention that is being given to what proceeds from the mouth of God through those appointed spokesmen whom the Lord has chosen, whom the Lord has called to communicate his mind and will to his people. The Old Testament word, which is translated diligently, has to do with what we hear and requires us to hear attentively, to pay attention. Now, you may not actually be attracted to the courier or the postman on his bike, but the courier himself carries a message, and when you open the envelope, you'd better pay attention. Because though the postman, though the courier, has a place and a part within the overall purpose of delivering something that is of significance and important, it is what is delivered that is of real importance to you as you open up the envelope and you remove the content and you begin to read what is within it. Long ago, I remember that we would get brown envelopes coming to the door. My father would. In those days, it would be addressed to him as, his name was Rupert Nigel Lansley Pike, Esquire. They don't say Esquire these days, but in those days, yes. Now, I never knew that he was a squire. I wish that he might have been, because our circumstances might have been a bit better than what they actually were. But nonetheless, he certainly had this fancy title of a squire. But then you will notice on the envelope these words. And somehow, when I looked at these words, they had an effect upon me. OHMS. On His Majesty's Service. Now, was that a good thing or was it a bad thing? Well, it depends. We have to open up the envelope and look inside to see. If it's on His Majesty's Service, then you tend to think, well, it's very important. It's significant. Maybe you're being called up for service, as it were, in the army or something of that kind. So the courier comes and he delivers these things, and we are interested in the message. The town crier may not have the most melodious of voices, but when he cries, hear ye, then we had better stop what we're doing and give attention to what he is about to say, because he is there appointed to deliver something of significance or importance as a representative of the king or maybe the highest court in the land. So it is that which is important. Yeah, maybe he's not good looking. Maybe you don't like the sound of his voice. Maybe you wish that the man on his bike was a little bit different and you don't really trouble yourself too much that the dog goes after him. But nonetheless, it's what he leaves within the post, in the mailbox, that is certainly important. The professor that you have at university may not be the most gripping lecturer, but you need to listen to him. It's imperative. It's necessary, and it is vital. And diligence in hearing means, among other things, that you as a listener, need to direct your mind and discipline yourself to give diligent attention. Now, there's always a dilemma here as to why people don't understand what is sometimes being said or stated. The preacher needs to be diligent in his preparation. And for quite a few years now, I have tried to be diligent in my effort and attempt to communicate what is there written within the Word of God. And it's something that I still continue to aim for. I haven't arrived. I think I said this before, but I always remember Martin Lloyd-Jones saying that there have only been two occasions when I have preached perfect sermons. Two occasions, he said. He was a great preacher. Those of you who have listened to him or have had a transcript of his messages know what a great preacher, what a great teacher. But he said there's only been two occasions when I have preached perfect sermons, and on both occasions I was asleep. I was dreaming. And, well, I've had many a dream like that myself, and I think probably I'll go on dreaming, because you never really preach the most perfect sermon that you would like to preach. You dream about it, you think about it, but you aim for it nonetheless, and you try to use the appropriate language. And I realize, even in later years, or latter years, that I have used words and plucked them out of the air. They haven't always been the most suitable of words, because they haven't been as plain and as clear as Anglo-Saxons ought to use words. You know, when Churchill used to speak, then Winston Churchill himself, he commanded, as it were, the attention of the people. They would turn on their radios during that period of the Second World War, and you would listen to this voice, so distinct voice of Sir Winston Churchill, and he would command the minds and the hearts of the people. We will fight them. We will fight them on the beaches, etc., etc. We will fight them on the land, and so on. And people would understand. It was plain Anglo-Saxon, Saxonism, is that right, which he used. And I would like to use those kind of terms more plainly, more clearly, more precisely, more profoundly, as it were. And I haven't always managed it, I haven't always attained to it. So I can say that there's a problem in the pulpit. I agree with that. Sometimes the voice is the voice of a mumbler. And instead of addressing, as it were, the congregation, you're kind of looking down, as it were, and maybe paying far too much time at your notes when you should be communicating more clearly. Sometimes it's been a monotone, and that's very boring, and you go to sleep, etc. So you need, as it were, the movement, as it were, not only of the body language itself, but of the voice, the modulation, and so on, in order to communicate such a message that should grip our hearts and souls. So I recognize there's a problem in the pulpit, and the man in the pulpit needs to work and go on working. So since 1957, I have been preaching. But since that time, I still need to go on working. I need to go on laboring. I need to go on mastering, as it were, an art which I haven't yet mastered, I don't believe, but aiming for it. But I would also say this, that the problem is not only in the pulpit, the problem is in the pew, because some of us are dull of hearing. And however plain and clear and precise maybe the teacher preacher is himself, then the problem lies with those who are not diligently giving attention when they ought to give attention to the Word of God. And as you diligently attend to the subjects that will be announced here from the pulpit, then you will learn, insofar as you concentrate and not allow yourself to be distracted and be diverted by so much that can occupy the mind. Yeah, the problem is in the pulpit. I agree with that. The problem lies with me. I agree with that. But also the problem lies there in the pew. What are you thinking about? What is your mind set upon? What are you really considering within your own heart? And here, this call to diligence is a moral virtue which has to do with listening, it has to do with hearing, it has to do with attentiveness. He that hears, let him hear, and hear with a mind that is focused upon the majesty of our God, who uses couriers and messengers to deliver his truth. So diligence is a moral virtue, but secondly, diligence is a motivational value. In other words, it is that which drives us and spurs us on. It is man's precious possession. If we might just go back to the chapter that we read in Proverbs, chapter 12, and there verse 27, whoever is slothful will not roast his gain. The lazy man is just not going to take the time or put in the effort to do what is necessary in order to satisfy the appetites of his stomach. He'll be waiting around for somebody else to do it all for him. He is like someone who is turning on his bed from side to side, doesn't really want to open his eyes, and just yawns, and he's a lazy man. But whoever is slothful will not roast his gain, but the diligent man will get precious wealth. And so the diligent are contrasted with the layabouts and the lazy and the slothful. And I think some reading of the book of Proverbs and applying it to some parts of society would be a very good thing. People themselves are their own worst enemies. They bring upon themselves some of the conditions and some of the circumstances in which they are really finding it hard to make ends meet. And there are those people who ought not to be where they are, but they are where they are because of their own fault. They do not, as it were, rise to the challenges, even though there are difficulties and obstacles before them. And many of the great success stories of life are the stories of men and women who have not, as it were, submitted to things as they are and say, well, look, that's it, I can't do anything about it. They have risen above, and with diligence and with earnestness, they have sought to triumph over the obstacles that have been in their path ever since birth, and they have conquered, and they have achieved, and been very successful. Charles Bridges, if you get any of his works, I recommend them to you, because he is another writer who is very readable. And he has written on the Psalms, he has written on Proverbs, etc. And he says, real substance is the reward of the diligent. Real substance is the reward of the diligent. Precious is the fruit of his toil. He is a laborer. He is industrious. And increasing by his unwearied exercised, untiring exercise. Live then, Christian, more in thy work. Spend and be spent in it. Thy privileges will be enlarged, thy substance will be enriched, thy God will be honored, and thy crown will be secured. So he is saying, don't give up, don't give in, don't, as it were, dismiss things and say, well, look, nothing can be done about it, I can't do any more. You rise above this, and with industry and intent and with discipline and determination and diligence, you apply yourself, even though the gifts may be small. What you do with what you have is important. You can either squander it, spend it, or you can invest it in such a way that gradually over time it will attract interest. And you will be able to do more with what God has given you. If you don't sow, you will not reap. If you do not invest, you will not increase your assets. If you don't work, then you're going to wear out if you don't work out. If you don't keep fit, then the likelihood is that you're going to grow fat. The godly are diligent. If you're not diligent, then maybe you end up doing nothing. but reading about those who are successful and wishing you were like them. And very often we read biographies or autobiographies of people who are achievers, who have accomplished much, and say, oh, isn't that great? Oh, I would like to be like that. And we just pour ourselves another cup of coffee and turn the pages of the book that we are reading and say, hey, wouldn't it be wonderful to be like that? Like this woman, like this man. See, they've achieved so much, they've gained so much. But you've got to read and notice that sometimes they began with nothing. They were not born with a silver spoon in their mouth. And they had to labor and work hard for that which they have got. And all you and I sometimes do is to wish we were like it. We've almost said to ourselves, I cannot be like that. I cannot do that. And we have given up. We don't bother, and we're not tenacious. We don't fight. But the diligent man is a person who holds on and fights. And though maybe he loses at times and fails at times and stumbles at times, he says, I'm still pressing on. I'm still persevering. I'm still going to do it one way or the other. And he accomplishes things, and he does so by the grace of God. So don't be, as it were, among those people who wish that I were like him, wish that I were like her, because wishing ain't going to get you anywhere. It's just going to leave you in poverty street. It's going to leave you, as it were, content with just ordinary common things of life, and you're not going to excel. The diligent man is a person who excels and is one, as the book of Proverbs will tell us, will even stand before kings. He'll make his mark in life. He'll be somebody who will leave an impression. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10. It says this, whatever your hand finds to do, you're cooking? Are you building? Are you playing the piano? Are you painting? Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. That is strength. That is diligence. That is taking advantage of the moment, redeeming the time, because the deeds are evil. What a great time it is for us to live in. You may not always think so, the 21st century. And sometimes with a degree of nostalgia, you may tend to look back, you know, to the days of yesterday. And the older you get, you have less to look forward to and far more to look back on. And there may be certain regrets and wishes. And you may think that yesterday is better than today. Well, I want to suggest to you that's a load of nonsense. That's not quite as it really is. You really want to live back yesterday? I suggest those of you who do have not read your history. If you really want to live in the past, read the history of the past. And you may think things are getting worse and worse and worse. You want to live in 18th century England? 19th century England? Huh? You want to go to the dentist in 19th century England? I mean, who wants to do that? Things are better. Thank God for that. Yeah, there are many things that trouble us and disturb us and cause us anxiety, unquestionably so. And though I'm not very tech savvy, as many of you are aware, for some unknown reason, I have a strange attraction to things technical, and I kind of like it. And you know, nowadays, when babies are born, they are born with a smartphone in their hands instead of, as it were, the little rattle that used to be given them when they're a few months old. And I wish that maybe I had been born in this day and time when it wasn't a rattle that was given to me, but it was a smartphone, and that I could start, even by the age of 6 months or 9 months, you know, to tap around on all of these things and be such a whiz kid, that even maybe by the age of 5 or 6, I can tell my parents or my grandparents how to operate, you know, what to me, even now, is something beyond my ken, beyond my knowledge. I don't know how the thing works. And I'm one of these people who presses this, that, and the other, and hope it does work. And generally it doesn't. And so I have to call in help and assistance. But I'm glad I live in this age. I like this sort of generation. I don't like the terrorism. I don't like the movements that are beginning to come into the foreground, as it were. I am a little anxious for my own children or my grandchildren, that is true. But then I don't know that I really want them to live in a generation prior to this one. There are many things we can learn. Thank God for the progress in medicine, progress in science, progress in technology, etc. Thank God for what we're able to use even as a church to be able to communicate the gospel. So that whereas missionaries in the 18th and 19th century did go to Africa, go to certain parts of Asia, etc., they were limited maybe by natural boundaries, by diseases, etc., which afflicted them seriously. But now this gospel, through the use of technology, can transcend the mountains, can go beyond the deserts, can reach into the very rooms of young Muslim men and women who have a smartphone and are able to pick up from some satellite, as it were, that is passing around up there and get information about the gospel, about the Lord Jesus Christ. Isn't that wonderful? It certainly is wonderful what happened in the 18th, 19th century and before with the spread of the gospel as people walked great distances and suffered a considerable cost. But today we can reach thousands upon thousands of people. And we still can be diligent in all of this. And as far as this church is concerned, isn't it great that we are able to make use of sort of technology? One day my name will be in lights, as you can see by the camera here. And whatever will get known, I don't think it will be quite like that. But what we can do is communicate the gospel. We can proclaim the good news of salvation. And we can make use of all of these things to the glory of God. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with might. Bridges, Charles Bridges, he said this. He said, whoever found Satan asleep at his work. Whoever found Satan asleep at his work. He is diligent. I can't remember who it was. And our brother Ron Nugent here might be able to tell me. But one of the Puritans, I think it was, said, look, the devil is so busy. He is so much at work. He is such a shepherd, as it were, who is doing this and doing that. Watch, we sometimes are snoozing and sleeping and moaning and complaining and, as it were, getting all upset with one another over something. The devil is always on the go. He is always active. He doesn't take time off. He doesn't retire in any way. He doesn't know anything about retirement. He's always busy. And Charles Bridges tells us Satan is never asleep at his work. He's very diligent, very diligent. One of the Puritans wanted to be found among the number of those that spend themselves with labor and not of those who rust in laziness. Laziness. I believe there's time for recreation. Our Heavenly Father, our Lord Jesus, the great shepherd of the sheep, will have us, as it were, to lie down and rest. And we need to know when to stop. It's not always good burning the candle at both ends. And he who is well acquainted with our infirmities, remembers that we are dust, he causes his sheep to lie down in green pastures. And he leads them beside the still waters. And he says to his disciples, as he does in the Gospels, come aside and rest a while. So we do need to acknowledge and recognize the place of that. But at the same time, we don't want to rust because of laziness. How much time is spent, as it were, in the lounge, on the couch, watching television? How much time is spent, as it were, with these gadgets that we have in our hand? Just think about it. We spend far more time doing this, that, and the other than we do reading the scriptures. We do. Now is a day when we're obsessed with those good things that God has given us, but instead of us mastering them, they have now begun to master us. And it's almost as if we cannot be separated from them. and we're not able to give ourselves as diligently as we might to the things of God because something else has begun to take over. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 23 and verse 24, Paul writes, "Whatsoever you do, do it heartily, that is with diligence, as to the Lord and not unto men, knowing that of the Lord you shall receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ." Oswald Sanders, who was quite an influential pastor, preacher within the 20th century, said the young man of leadership caliber will work. Talk about the young men. The young man of leadership caliber will work while others waste time. He will study whilst others snooze. He will pray while others daydream. Slothful habits are overcome, whether in thought, deed, or dress, as we apply ourselves diligently. And we can, as young people, young men, young women, establish, as it were, the habits of a lifetime by being ourselves diligent. This is a poem. "The heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flight. But they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." You know, I want to scale heights, and I become a dreamer. But they were not attained overnight. They were not obtained in a sudden flight. But while others slept and snoozed and squandered and wasted their time, there were those, they may be few, but there were those who were toiling upward in the night. We need our sleep. There's no question about it. They say 8 hours is important, at least 8 or 9 hours. But I'm not sure that one needs to be sort of totally governed by what other people say, even those who have done their research and everything. You've got to know your own self, you've got to know your own mind, you've got to know your own body, et cetera, et cetera. And it's very easy to want to sleep. I find it very easy to want to sleep. One of the good things about television is that it puts me to sleep. But, you know, there is just an ease in which the body sort of relaxes, as it were, and we want to go to sleep. But we need to establish a sort of a pattern and a habit and a mindset. Say, look, no, I'm not necessarily going to be governed and guided by what people are saying. I need 8 hours. Who said I needed 8 hours? I may need 7 or just 6. And use the time that I have to be able to devote myself to the things of God, to more reading or to more study, etc. Let me just mention some other things. Diligence is modeled in the lives of other people. God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which you have shown towards his name, in that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. And we desire that every one of you do show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope unto the end, that you be not slothful, but followers of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. So writes the author to the Hebrews. We desire that every one of you do show the same diligence as others who worked and labored and ministered to the saints. You know Hebrews 11 very well, which of course in itself is a gallery that has the portrait and the picture of saints, men and women, and they were diligent. We begin, as it were, with Noah. We look at Abraham, we look at Sarah, we see the likes of Moses, etc. And there are many other beside, of whom the world itself is not worthy, and how diligent they were. And of course, you have that well-known passage in Proverbs chapter 31, and from verse 10 onwards, with regarding the woman who fears the Lord. I mean, she was diligent. What a woman. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it with the fruit of her hands. She plants a vineyard. Oh, she's very much like Catherine von Bora, the wife of Martin Luther. And she was a busy woman, planting trees, sowing the vegetable garden, looking after the chooks and everything like that. And I mean, there is this woman here. She's so diligent. She's looking after her household, and she also has time for considering some real estate. She buys a field. Where's her husband? What's he doing? Well, he's still in bed, probably. Not necessarily, but there's something about this woman which tells us that she is a diligent woman. She is most earnest. And we can learn, as it were, from the examples of these people. Even in Colossians chapter 4, verse 12, reference is made to one called Epaphras. And the Apostle Paul makes mention of him because he is very, very diligent. Concerning him, it is said, Epaphras, who is one of you, a servant of Christ Jesus, greets you, always struggling on your behalf in his prayers, yet you may stand mature and fully assured in the will of God. Very diligent. What do we have to say about diligent people? Well, they get up early enough to arrive on time to appointments and to complete chores prior to arrival. Diligent people. They appear punctually, showing others that they as people are dependable. In addition, a diligent person takes initiative to complete tasks rather than waiting to be told what to do. A diligent person identifies his own goals and the goals of people that he works for and strives to realize those goals. Diligence requires continuing on a task that is unpleasant. Even if a task is difficult to complete, a diligent person does his best. If the work is physical and the person is out of shape, a diligent person finds ways to improve his physical fitness or health in order to complete the task. In addition, diligent persons follow through on tasks rather than completing part of a task or cutting corners. Enthusiasm to learn new things demonstrates diligence because it shows a frame of mind that accepts challenges and responsibility. We should always seek to be better, to strive for the best. We should do that through reading, through seminars, schooling, listening, training, study. Whatever task we do, even if it is way outside our gifts and talents, we must do it and be our best. And when we have the attitude that our life depends upon it, we will do it well. At least our livelihood and how we are with others determine what we will most likely succeed at. The true disciple will endure to the very end. He will be diligent. He will be diligent. Here are some identifiable marks of the diligent person. Well, I've already mentioned one. You've got to be punctual and on time. People who have a reputation for being hard workers not only show up on time, but they arrive early. I like to apply that to church attendance. There is a diligence. There is an attentiveness. There is a readiness, a preparedness. I can't imagine you turning up late for school unless, of course, you've been held back by some traffic jam, by some sort of accident, as it were, on the way to school. You're going to be there on time. And if you're not there on time several days in a row, somebody's going to call you into the office and say, look, why is it you're late? If you go to the doctors, I mean, doctors never on time, but if you go to the doctors nonetheless, you yourself should be on time, you attempt to be on time, and you're punctual. If you're an appointment for a job and a job says, look, you'd be there at 10:30, you're going to be on time. If you're going to go to a theater, you're going to go to a movie, and it starts at such and such an hour, you're going to aim to be there on time. Coming to the house of God? Why is it that we are so late? Why is it we drag our feet? Why is it we're not diligent enough to be on time? Get up in the morning. You're so lazy. Get up. Shake yourself, as it were. And be ready to be on time. Why? Because I'm coming before the king, like we're saying this morning. I'm coming to meet his majesty, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And if you're diligent, you will certainly be punctual. And you'll be motivated by God-centered priorities. You'll be a hard worker, self-motivated. And you'll be the type of person who will sweep the floor when it's dirty without waiting for the boss to walk by and say something to you about cleaning things up. So young people and old people in this congregation, and you know, you can be old and you can say to yourself, well, I got arthritis, you know, and I've got this and I've got that and I've got the other. So we have to make allowances for that kind of thing. But there is always something that we can do. And you see something that needs to be done, do it. If you're a member of this congregation, just look around. Is there somebody to talk to? Talk to that person. Is there something which suggests there are crumbs, as it were, on the floor? Go and get a broom, as it were. Help with the chairs. Do anything. The diligent person is looking out to do something or to meet with people. Do all things diligently. You see, the diligent are go-getters. And as Peter makes quite clear even here, and as we'll have to look at next week, God willing, they are the kind of people who take steps to add to their faith. The apostle says there in verse 5, "For this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue." Virtue with knowledge. Knowledge with self-control. Self-control with steadfastness and so on. You're not standing still. You see, the diligent person can't be stagnant. If you're stagnant, you stink. So you really are somebody who is active and you're mobile and you're working arduously in order to press on. And then you have to attend to the flower of faith and develop it diligently. It's diligent. Here is the flower of faith, and this plant needs watering. I have to confess that there are times when I have bought plants, and I've just assumed that they will just flourish, and I've forgotten to water them. Well, it's not like that, and it's just like our faith. Our faith is God-given. It's there, planted within the heart. But what does it mean? That it's not to be attended to and cultivated and taken care of and watered, of course. And we are to do it diligently. The plant needs watering. The fire needs fuel. We're up in the Sawtooth Mountains and in Idaho, and there we were in this camp, and it was freezing cold in the morning and freezing cold at night as well, and mountains were covered in snow, etc. And there was the need to get fuel for the fire, and it was great being around this fire, you know, and you kind of got close to it and you warmed your hands, etc. And that wasn't too bad, but the fire was getting lower and lower. So what do? Blow on it and wish that maybe the flames would rise higher and it would get hotter. No, you needed fuel, so we had to get this wood. Yeah, but the wood just wasn't around us. So we had to go out and get it. In about 2 or 3 days, my son-in-law Stephen had these electric chainsaw. That's right, chainsaws. Which was given to him by a neighbor. And so we'd go up where there are a lot of dead trees. There were a lot of dead trees. And we spent several mornings, as it were, just cutting branches off trees and cutting the trunks, and as it were, and then stacking it into the van that we had and bringing it back home and then able to kindle this fire. But lo and behold, the thing got lower and lower, and so did the log supply get lower and lower. So we had to go out, and there was another day, and go through the same kind of process. It was a working holiday, actually, and go through the same kind of process and labor and work at cutting branches and getting these trunks of trees, as it were, in sizes that you could carry home. And you had to do it 2 or 3 times. If you don't have it, the fire goes out. You have to work at it. The athlete, He needs to exercise and do his workout. The tires on the car need pumping, which reminds me, mine do. And the body needs feeding. We are to diligently attend to the new life of Christ by working out our salvation with fear and trembling. And so Paul's exhortation, therefore, which is grounded upon all that he has previously written in verses 3 and 4, is this: for this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge. And so may God grant that we will have that grace and that gift of diligence ourselves, and that we may ourselves be in earnest for his name's sake. Amen.